Welcome back to Harbour Unboxed. It is Q&A time. Well, actually, it's still Q&A time, isn't it?
Yes.
Because we've done part one, part two, and that would make this...
part four.
Yep, we're now a children's show, so we've pivoted. We got bored with tech. But no, we're here for part three. A lot of good questions, so some hopefully satisfactory answers. Again, I always aim for satisfactory. Tim seems to think
set that... set the bar very high.
Yes, well...
acceptable, satisfactory answers. That's what you're getting from this episode.
Hopefully. I don't want to guarantee it because, you know, that could be a clickbait, even though you've already clicked. Hopefully, we did some good clickbait. Hopefully, you enjoyed that. So, before we clickbait you further...
Today's sponsor spot is brought to you by Thermal Grizzly and their CryoSheet graphene thermal pads, which are an excellent alternative to thermal pastes. They offer very high thermal conductivity with no liquid components, so they can't dry out and therefore don't degrade over time like pastes and even liquid metals. CryoSheet is very easy to use, it's extremely durable, and is available in a range of sizes to suit most applications. I've personally done some high-end GPU testing with CryoSheet, and the results were impressive, very similar in fact to that of liquid metal, but without the mess, and of course, no risk of drying out. So for more information, please check the link in the video description.
All right, Tim, do you think that you yourself and or other reviewers are afraid of being too negative in the current PC landscape, of almost everything being mediocre by saying certain products are terrible? I get the impression that a lot of reviewers nowadays tend very heavily towards meh and not really putting down a strong opinion, even though there are some products that are clearly far worse than others. Really, I thought if a product was bad, it still got pretty hammered for being bad.
Yeah.
I don't think the current sort of landscape, the goings on in the industry would make us shy away from that. I think it's just more that it's like almost expected at this point. It's like, oh, well, here's another unexciting product that's either too expensive or doesn't really offer anything new in terms of performance or goes backwards in one way or another. I don't think we're shying away from that.
No, I don't think so. And I think as well, there tends to be a bit of a disconnect between reviewing opinions and like the opinions of certain buyers. Because for example, if you're thinking about buying a product and you see a review and it's really bad value for your use case, like for example, you're after gaming performance and you see that and you're like, okay, it's not great value, so therefore it's a terrible product. So you write a comment, you're like, hey, I've watched the review. This is a terrible product. But as a reviewer, we're sort of considering both that viewpoint, but also the viewpoint of people who have different use cases and things like that. Now, I'm not saying this applies to certainly some of the products that we've seen, but I think things like a 4060 Ti 8GB is generally a universally terrible product. But I think that's why you sometimes see review conclusions being a bit soft compared to what you'd see from a commenter, is because of that sort of commenter. They've got their focus on what they want. It's not hitting on value. You leave that negative comment. But as reviewers, yeah, we're trying to cater for all sorts of different people and opinions. That's why something like an RTX 4090, for example, gets that sort of divisive response, right? Where we're sort of saying, well, if you have a lot of disposable income to spend on a product like that, it is a really fast GPU. It's a good product. It is much faster than the previous gen products, but it's very expensive. Whereas someone that can't really afford that is sort of seeing it and saying, well, you know, that what are they doing here? They're only producing this one product for high-end buyers, so the lineup is kind of terrible. So, yeah, I think that's... I wouldn't say that many reviewers sort of shy away from the terrible angle too much. I think at least you've certainly called out some products as being very terrible
this generation.
But I mean, I think the sentiments as well with, you know, some releases being quite boring and uninteresting can go into the reviews as well. 4080 Super comes to mind there with sort of, you know, it's not an amazing product. It's not, I wouldn't say it's an awful product, but there's not a lot of enthusiasm about that. So that sort of gets to that meh thing I think you were talking about.
Yeah, that's right. You can't really trash a product that's now been discounted and made ever so slightly faster. It's just, yeah, the excitement factor. It's the meh thing again.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Interesting question this one. There are a lot of comments relating to this topic. In Australia, so they've listed PC Case Gear as the retailer.
We know those guys.
Both Super and non-Super 4080s are selling for around the same price. where's the $200 US discount?
Yeah, so I inquired about this at a few different sources that I won't name because it was off the record. But essentially, the answer is the 4080s were discounted leading up to the release of the 4080 Super because they knew what was coming. So they didn't want a heap of 4080s now being more expensive and just sitting there. So to clear that inventory, the discounts were applied. So essentially, you were getting your cheap 4080 Super before the 4080 Super arrived in the form of just a standard 4080. It just wasn't 3-4% faster. So
yeah, that's right. I looked at the pricing when I saw this question in the US pricing, the Australian pricing, and the Australian price didn't seem that outrageous for the 4080 Super. I think the conversion should have been around $1,700 Aussie once you factor in the currency conversion and tax. That's around where it should have been. I think some of the cheaper models were around $1,800 Aussie. So that's a fairly typical NVIDIA tax that you would see from, their GPUs in Australia. And we've seen that across the lineups quite a bit. So it seems like it's not like they're selling it at a $1,200 US equivalent price. It is the $1,000 equivalent price. But as you say, the 4080s sort of have almost become the $1,000 US card in Australia.
Yep.
And that's why they're sitting a little bit cheaper. Some of the conversions, like the 4080 would have been below $1,000 US, sort of the equivalent US price for some of the models in Australia at least. So
yeah, well, I think it was midway through last year there was a heavy discount applied to the 4080 in Australia because they just weren't selling.
Yeah.
But they couldn't move them at all. And so for a brief time there was, they were subsidized and sold at a lower price. And I think it was similar to the price that the Supers are currently available at. So NVIDIA had some data there. They knew at what prices people were willing to buy and this stock would move, which is how they landed probably at the $1,000 US price for the 4080 Super to make that sort of the official price. But anyway, the answer is basically the discounts were applied in advance so they weren't holding a bag of 4080s that they couldn't sell.
Yep.
Why didn't NVIDIA just lower the price of the 4080 by $200? You're asking the wrong person, to be perfectly honest. But probably...
it's a hard one.
Probably because they just thought attaching the Super branding to it and that would make it a bit more exciting and generate a few more sales just by doing that. Though they did have to sell higher quality silicon to do so. So a bit weird, but then they were able to...
I think it's a brand perception thing.
I think it has to be, right?
Like cutting the price of a product that already exists is sort of like you're almost conceding that that product was a fail.
Even though they did that, though.
But it's... For people like us who are very in the market and you're enthusiasts and sort of you follow, what was the previous models? What's the new models? This is happening. We can make the call that it's basically the same product sold at a lower price. So it's effectively a price cut and therefore it's kind of the same effect, right? But there are people who don't look into it as much and they're sort of, if they see something like, the 4080 is like $200 cheaper, now that's a bit weird. I guess maybe that wasn't so successful. But if they now launch a new product called the 4080 Super for $1,000, it's like, it's a totally new thing.
Mm-hmm.
So for the people where that, this obviously doesn't work for us because you can't sort of get us in that way. But for the people where you're not paying as much attention, which is fine, obviously, and you're just a very casual observer and you see they want that new product to say, this is our new thing. We're selling it at a new price as opposed to this is our old thing that we couldn't sell at the old price. So now it's a new price.
Yeah, that's right. And also, as you say, with the brand perception, $50 discount is different to a $200 discount.
That's right.
So they've knocked a little bit off, whereas this is, kind of big news. And then tying to what you're saying, if you're a salesman or whatever and you're selling these things or you're in video and you want to make a quote, you can say, not only is this a new product at a new price, but it's faster.
Yeah, that's right.
You can say it's faster. It's got more cores. It's a beefed up, improved thing. You don't have to, you don't have to say it's only maybe 3-4% faster, but you can say it's the new version, it's the super version, and it's faster.
That's right. And you can even say things like, it's got a new price for the current market, whereas the 4080 was launched in a different time, sort of. So there's a whole bunch of factors to consider there. But NVIDIA typically has done this. They've avoided the official price cut as much as possible. The only times you really see it is things like the 4070, where they want to continue that product in the market, but they launch another product at the same price.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only real time that we typically see official price cuts. When if Nvidia wants
small one,
if Nvidia wants to adjust the pricing of their lineup, they will almost always release a new product instead, which gives them, you know, perception advantages. And that's all. The GPU market is so boring that they've obviously tried to generate a bit more interest in, hey, we've got, like, again, this is another factor we haven't talked about, right? If they price cut the 4080, how many people are re-reviewing it and regenerating, you know, the third-party analysis and content about it?
Yep.
Not very many people. You'd see some news articles, but you wouldn't see the whole, this is new, let's test it again. And I know your review, Kate, you sounded quite bored in the video, but that Nvidia was wanting, you know, the whole new wave of information, new wave of excitement, hopefully, and then you generate sales off the back of that, which a price cut doesn't always give you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, hopefully that explains some of the thought processes why they would release a new product that's so similar instead of just price cutting the old one. What would a well-positioned APU look like in today's market?
Okay, well, I guess there's two ways of going about that. There's the performance side of things, and then there's the value side of things.
Yes.
So as I said in my review of the 8700G, technically a very impressive product, what it can do for an APU, obviously, for integrated graphics, it's
yep.
technically impressive, but it's also a relatively expensive product. Mm-hmm. And therefore you can, if you're gaming, as we showed, you can buy a Core i3 and an RX 6600 for slightly less and get 150% more performance, which makes the APU kind of bad for gaming. Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that it is technically impressive. And then on the CPU side of things, if you're buying it for CPU performance, then again, you can get better CPU performance there for the same money. So for that part to be well-positioned in the current market, it'd probably need to be close to half the price that it currently is. But then it's, in some ways, it's an absurdly good value product. So it's a tough one. Like, AMD risk undercutting so many of their different CPUs because they've got such a diverse lineup now, which I suppose that heavy product segmentation does cause problems for the APUs.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, realistically, if it was around $200 even, then, you know, that would be pretty good because you can't really beat that with discrete hardware. But having said that, you know, if it's doing 40 frames in a game for $200, but if you spend $250, you can get 100 and something frames per second. It's like, well, you'd probably be better off again for gaming just spending the extra $50. So I think for it to be well positioned to the point where you couldn't really justify spending a lot more money, and it sort of fits in the cost per frame thing, it'd be half price, would be my guess. I haven't crunched the numbers, but off the top of my head, I think half price is probably where it would make sense in terms of value.
Yeah, they're kind of straddling two separate things, aren't they? Mm-hmm. They've got the CPU side of things because they can't undercut it to the level like half price. Potentially, that would be the best value gaming CPU on that lineup, in which case then, as you said, like people might not buy like a 7600 or those sort of products. And then on the other hand, they have to sort of figure out where's the GPU performance sort of slotting in. And those can often be contradictory sort of goals. Like the CPU and GPU markets are sort of priced differently when you try and combine them, mm-hmm. as we've sort of seen with this product, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Like they could significantly increase the GPU, you know, capabilities of that chip, but does that make sense?
Well,
you know,
technically it may not be possible either. With what they've currently got, realistically the CPU is far too powerful for the accompanying integrated graphics.
That's right. Like in a sense, they kind of have to make it cheaper so that the GPU side of things sort of slots in more with entry-level discrete GPU options and combos that mm-hmm. you showed. And then on top of that, sort of reduce the CPU performance, because when you're gaming on integrated graphics, you're largely GPU limited, reduce it to the point where it doesn't cannibalize sales for people buying the APU and then pairing it with discrete options. So as we sort of, I think we talked about this in a bit more length in our podcast, you know, it's a repurposed laptop chip. It's not purpose-built for desktop computing, which is why a lot of these issues are sort of coming up. If it was designed specifically for desktop gaming, I think you'd see a different set of design goals put into play where mm-hmm. maybe things are a bit beefier, it performs a little better in certain areas. But yeah, because it's this repurposed silicon, there's only so much they can really do, and it ends up just being this sort of niche product, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. All right, Tim, I know you love consoles. Big console gamer, this guy.
Okay.
Why is the PS5 APU so much more powerful and yet cheaper than the 8700G? Why don't they just release the PS5 APU for laptops and desktops? That could probably land in some hot water. I imagine that's a sort of copyrighted design, proprietary type design for Sony.
I mean, that's right. It's a contract between AMD and Sony to create this, what AMD describes like semi-custom APU that's specifically designed for that product. So it's not to be sold in just your general consumer products and things like that. And part of that and why they do it in that way is that Sony is ordering, you know, 50 million of those things over the lifespan of the console, probably more than that over the lifespan of the console. So they're getting it at it's a low margin product for AMD. They are making money on it, but they're not making heaps of money, but hopefully because of the volume, it's still a worthwhile thing for them. They're not selling 50 million of these APUs to desktop customers, for example. Whereas with the desktop CPU lineup and their GPUs, for example, those are much higher margin products. So they're not, even if they, let's say they could take the PS5 APU sort of design and rework it so it's not semi-custom anymore, it's a different new product that's similar, they would want the margins that they're getting from either their desktop GPUs or their desktop CPUs and apply that to the APU product. So it would no longer be this, you know, the PS5 is like $450, the silicon must be less than that. It's not going to be this $300 APU. It would be like a $600 or $700 product because that is what would be needed to get the margins the same as their other products and to fit into their own lineup and things like that. It just wouldn't be this cheap, low-cost product anymore, not to mention all the other factors like the APU in the PS5 uses, you know, it's not a socketed design. It's all on the same board. It's why it's more powerful. It uses GDDR6, I believe. Don't quote me on that. It uses GDDR memory that's soldered to the board.
Has better memory access, all that sort of stuff. So it operates more like a discrete GPU in that sense.
That's right. You get way more memory bandwidth than what you could get from an AM5 socket and stuff. So it's just the reasons why they haven't done that are just, yeah, they're numerous. And yeah, again, even if it was possible, they just wouldn't sell it at the same price. So yeah, apparently there's rumors that they're considering more down this design. And by that, I mean a much larger GPU in their APU offerings with some future products. That's apparently what the rumors are saying.
Yeah, it's tough because they're restricted by the PC platform.
That's right.
Again, it's not a custom thing like the PlayStation where you have direct access to high-speed memory. You're accessing DDR5 memory through existing, you know, interfaces.
So I would think that is potentially a mobile-only or embedded-only sort of design. We'll have to wait and see exactly where that lands, but yeah, there's a whole bunch of reasons why we just don't get PS5 APUs for super cheap, unfortunately. But it does mean that the consoles are generally great value. If you're just after a gaming-only system and you want something that's powerful, the PS5 is genuinely quite powerful for the price. So, yeah, for some types of gamers, it makes sense, and that's why they sell so well.
Mm-hmm. Can motherboard features get any better to make spending more money worth it? It doesn't seem worth it to spend the extra couple of $100 on premium boards when the low-end boards don't lose performance and have decent enough feature set. Well, yeah, that's absolutely true, which is why we look at VRM thermal performance and stuff like that on the entry-level boards, because typically that's where they've probably been most problematic.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, really, the motherboard just has to connect the CPU to the memory, your graphics card, offer some decent USB. There's not too much to it these days. Like, if you want good quality audio, generally don't use motherboards anyway. Buy a DAC or some sort of external solution. And yeah, the sort of entry level to early mid range generally has you well covered. The entry level stuff can be a bit light on USB support and things like that, so it's generally worth going a tier or two up to get a bit better support and a bit better quality board if you can afford it. But yeah, as for the high end, mid range, and then the high end, yeah, I mean, that's just for people who are excited about building a new PC and they have hundreds of dollars to blow on the motherboard. They want it to look all special and have every last possible feature under the sun. But as for, is there any kind of like features that make them better? Like, the higher end boards, generally speaking, do have features that justify the price increase within reason. I'm not talking about like your Aorus Extremes and your Godlikes and your, you know, all those ultimate extreme boards. I'm talking more the sensible high end.
Yeah.
But yeah, you get better sort of PCIe lane configurations, you know, maybe future support for like USB 4 and stuff like that. So Yeah, we did a pretty detailed B650 roundup. So that breaks down all that sort of stuff and what you get at various different price tiers. But yeah, it sounds like you're sort of a person that's more into the entry-level value bang for your buck type boards, and that's perfectly fine. I'd say that's most people, really.
Yeah, the motherboard manufacturers know that because mm-hmm. they produce the most of those mid to entry-level boards, and mm-hmm. the higher-end boards are a lot more niche and things. But yeah, there are still reasons to buy those boards. You know, recently I swapped over my Threadripper system to an AM5 system. And for that, I needed quite a specific motherboard to put in the add-in cards and have all the USB functionality and things that I needed from that system. And that was probably not going to have been suited to a mid-range board. It mm-hmm. needed to be a higher-end board that had the lane configurations and amount of M.2 slots to fit in all my SSDs and things like that. So for people who are building a very specific type of system, one where they have very specific requirements, those high-end boards, they can make sense. Mm-hmm. Like for example, if I'm building a system and I've got, like in my current system, I had a couple of adding cards and a GPU and the motherboard, you know, some of them only have two PCIe slots. So mm-hmm. you have to, you can't even use those. And then if I wanted like gigabit Ethernet, then that's like a fourth add-in card, which is kind of like
they're not a
like
scam.
10 gigabit Ethernet.
They're not the same board with some fancy PCB colors and some LED
yeah,
whites
that's
or
right.
whatever.
It's like those $500, not $600 boards, they're not meant for your everyday average gamer who's only slotting in a GPU, hooking up a couple of USB things, maybe wants Wi-Fi and that's it. Mm-hmm. It's meant for people like me when I was building a workstation where it's like, I've got these requirements. I need to make sure I've got enough of these ports, enough of these ports. You know, do I need better networking? And would I prefer that integrated over the add-in card sort mm-hmm, of thing? Mm-hmm. Those are all the considerations. And eventually I happen to have on hand quite a good mid-range board, or mid to high-end board, which ended up working well. The Godlike still wouldn't have made any sense because it's kind of overkill. But
yeah,
those are who those boards are for, really.
Yeah, yeah, we're not justifying the likes of a Godlike board, just to be clear.
Those are more for people that want all that stuff plus the coolest looking
the wow factor,
the RGB yep. for Balin and all those things. So a video editor Balin who loves RGB. So yeah, high boards don't discount their purposes, but yeah, mid-range for most people, entry-level,
mm-hmm.
that's the stuff that makes the most sense.
Mm-hmm. All right, done.
Nice.
Yep, took January off and we did the January,
something like that.
So hopefully that was enjoyable. But yeah, I thought there were some good, unique questions that we sort of haven't tackled before, which is always what you want. But maybe that's because, yeah, we took a month off, sort of, kind of.
Bit of a refresher, yeah. Get some new exciting things talked about. So yeah,
yep.
Appreciate the questions from everybody who left it in our community tab, Discord community for the sort of exclusive Q&A section
all the legends.
Yes. Yes, lots of people that we appreciate who support the channel directly. What else?
That's pretty much it, yeah. Float Plane Patreon if you want to become a legend. If not, you're probably still a legend, especially if you've watched it to this point.
That's right.
Certified legend. But yeah, I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Tim.
See you next time.